I'm John Krall. Tomorrow is Veterans Day. Coming up on No Limits, we will talk about the challenges facing military veterans coming home. Nearly 150 years ago, just days before he became one of the last casualties of this country's bloodiest war, America's greatest leader urged his fellow citizens to care for those who have borne the battle, and for his widow, and for his orphan. Today, we'll talk about how well we have met Abraham Lincoln's challenge with our guests, U.S. Army Colonel Ross Waltemuth, Indiana National Guard First Lieutenant Bart Lamont, and Beth Carnes of the Indiana Mental Health Memorial Foundation. Please join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, the day's news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today about the challenges facing military veterans coming home. We're fortunate to have as our guests U.S. Army Colonel Ross Waltemuth.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the invitation.
Good to have you here, Colonel Waltemuth. First Lieutenant Bart Lamont of the Indiana Air National Guard.
Good afternoon, John. Thank you.
Good to have you here. And Beth Carnes of the Indiana Mental Health Memorial Foundation.
Hi, John. Thanks a lot.
It's good to have you here. And I also would like to apologize to the audience. I'm battling a little bit of a bug. This is not me trying to do a very bad Barry White imitation. This is about as well as I can speak right now. We're going to start, and I would like to invite our audience to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can also send an email to us at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. In addition to questions, we'd love to hear your stories this day on as we approach Veterans Day. I want to start a little bit by talking just about, in general terms, what sort of challenges veterans face when they come back home after serving. I think I'll start with you, Colonel Waltemuth.
Okay. Well, I think when we start looking at Indiana-specific, the first thing that jumps out at us is naturally a service member that's coming back in Indiana is a reserve component service member. So they're running into the same economic and community issues that are going on, whether a factory is closed down or there's economic problems in the communities they're in, but also with the fact that we don't have an active military base left in Indiana. Fort Ben Harrison's down to a reserve center. Grissom is down to a reserve air center, air base up there. And that has kind of taken away a lot of the support facilities that we had that would take care of the military and the family members when they came back to Indiana. So that immediately started us off with a challenge of how do we take care of appropriately and to the level of what they have deserved and the families deserve after serving, of taking care of them within the boundaries of the state of Indiana. And that's been a big challenge for us, is to build that network and that community structure to take care of our service members and their families.
Is it worse now than it's been in years past, would you say?
No. Right now, I would probably say when it comes to community support, it has gotten better. And there are a lot of things that have been going on in the last few years that has improved that. One area that, if you want to talk about getting worse, is maybe the number of service members that have done multiple deployments. And if a service member or a family has an issue after serving, doing a second deployment or a third deployment or in the Air Guard activation, that's going to add and contribute to more and more of the issues a family may be dealing with. With a war being 10 years long and the entire military service being a volunteer base, there's been a lot of interesting accumulation effects of multiple deployments and this long war we've been in. So it's been a very interesting, very challenging time right now to take care of them the way they deserve.
Lieutenant Bart Lamont, could you talk a little bit about the stresses that service people encounter when they come back?
Yes, I'd love to. I recently returned from a one-year deployment to the host province of Afghanistan as part of an agricultural development team. Mm-hmm. And we returned in August, our team, full of Indiana Army and Air National Guardsmen. And the stresses when you come back, there are certainly with your family, reintegration issues like that. But I think what the state has done on the federal level with the Yellow Ribbon Program, different stresses such as unemployment, your family, reintegration, other type of just issues as you adapt back into society, they've really addressed that. And we've gone through several different weekends through the last 3 months where we have addressed those issues with the state and federal agencies.
And how have they addressed them, can you say?
Well, agencies such as the Employer Support of the Garden Reserve, which we have actually while we were in Afghanistan. We were part of a conference call where we could actually Skype in and meet some employers. So about 2 months before our deployment were to end, before we came back, we were already introduced to some employers who were looking for employees.
Beth Carnes, could you talk a little bit about, given your background, obviously you're here from the Indiana Mental Health Memorial Foundation, exactly the kind of stresses that we put people under. We at times tend to forget that servicemen and women, although they become soldiers, are in fact just human beings, and we're putting them in incredibly difficult circumstances.
We
and
do.
Cutting them off from support systems back home.
Absolutely. And what we're seeing in this war, different from some of the other wars, that I think is going to have a very long-term impact, especially in states like Indiana that have deployed so many folks, is the fact that folks are not being killed in service, in theater, like they were in other wars because of all of the good technology that we have today. So what is happening, those folks are returning home, but we know we have a lot of PTSD. We know we have a lot of...
And I know what PTSD is, but
we're going to
get past the jargon here because
sorry
there are going to be
that.
People out there who...
So the post-traumatic stress and also the traumatic brain injuries, the likes of which we've never seen. So the issues that face us into the future, we believe in the mental health system, are going to be a bit overwhelming if we don't all realize those invisible wounds do exist out there. One of the things about Indiana is that we're such a rural state. So we have folks who might go back to a town, and they're the only person who deployed from that town for years. And so what does that guy do when he goes back to a small job that really, maybe didn't save his job? And how do people feel about him being gone while they've been here working? We have a lot of those reintegration stresses then that happen to that individual in the workplace. We also get calls from the family members saying, oh my word, this person went away, they've come home. They don't treat me the same as a wife. They're not treating the children the same. What do I do? How do I get help? The other sort of obstacle that we face with folks who are returning is the fact that they've been taught to be soldiers. Mm-hmm. These men and women are strong, and they've been taught, we got to figure this out. We have to work through it. We're over here. We've got a mission to do. When they get home, that strength doesn't always serve them well because they might need to be seeking help. And so we see that obstacle to getting folks into the help that they might need. And sometimes it takes a lot of damage in their life before they're willing to seek the help that they might need. And so we run into too much crisis, I think. And so our goal at the Mental Health Association is to work with everyone. And we've worked a lot with Colonel Waltemath and so appreciate the opportunity to be able to be involved as a community resource. Because what we'd like to do is help build resiliency in the soldiers before they go, help them understand some of these things that might occur when they get home so they're prepared. Sometimes it's just so shocking because they come home and they think everything will be the same. So we'd like to be a part of that process to help folks understand when it's time to seek treatment, when your buddy might need some help because you know them, how to have peers maybe that are trained to be really helpful to each other. So we believe the problems that we're going to face here in Indiana are going to be of a really large magnitude in the years to come.
We are talking about the challenges facing military veterans coming home on No Limits today. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I've heard a couple of terms thrown around. Basically, everybody's used that whole term of reentry or reintegration. And I guess what I'd like to talk, Lieutenant Lamont, I know you said you were just over there. Was it difficult to come back at a personal level? I mean, you go away and you have a set of experiences that none of your peers have had when you come back home. Your family hasn't had. They may share them vicariously through you and through your contact. But I would think, I've not been in the service and I've not been in a war zone myself. It can't help but be, how do you re-engage at that level? And if the question's too intrusive, it's fair to tell me that.
No. I'm happy to elaborate a little bit on it, especially on the personal level. I think it all starts at home with your families. And throughout these entire processes, the Yellow Ribbon Program, they put a stress on the families. And I've always, I've been blessed to have a very loving family that was my strongest support unit throughout this entire deployment. But those who don't have such a strong family, I think those are the ones who face the serious issues coming home. And the entire time we've been back for these one weekend a month, for the last 90 days, we have been meeting as a group, with our families involved, to talk about some of the stresses that a soldier or airman might face when they return.
What is the worst part of being over there, the hardest thing?
Me personally, it was definitely the separation. You're missing this year, for example. I'm really looking forward to Thanksgiving, being at home with my family for Thanksgiving. The Christmas, I think the holidays are inevitably the most difficult part to miss.
Colonel Waltemath, I'd ask the same sort of question. What's the biggest challenge with that, with the reentry here?
Well, I've been back. I was in Iraq 3 years ago. I've been back just about 3 years now. I got back in November of 2008. And as solid as my family is, I would still have to say that a lot of the changes and a lot of the stress are still in my family are some things that changed inside of me when it comes to perception and perspective. Give you a good example. I've got teenage kids. You know, raising teenage children is just a fight of its own. But there are times when my wife and my family will be all upset about something in our family, and my mentality will be, this is not an issue. This is not a big deal. I've witnessed third world country living. I've seen people who don't have what we have. And it kind of changed my temperament and my and inside of me, what I was willing to tolerate and what I wasn't. So though I'm one of these soldiers who's very fortunate to have come back and not had a negative experience, the deployment for me was very good. We had good leadership. I had good subordinates that worked with me. It was a very good experience for me. But it still changed my family nucleus when I came back. I was expecting to walk in the front door and my family be like it was 15 months before I left. And they had changed and things had changed. And it took me a long time to get back into the groove of being the dad and the husband. My wife had never run the checkbook. When I came back, my wife had run the checkbook for 15 months and wasn't sure she wanted to give it back. You know, little things like that. So there were some, though we have a very healthy family, and I feel all of us were very healthy, there was still some family nucleus adjustments. And so if you take that in a normal family, in a healthy family, you can then kind of see how this grows to where Beth is saying this could be a bigger problem than we know, because if there's any dysfunction in the family, the deployment may not have caused the dysfunction, but that separation, that anxiety, that distance apart will exacerbate those problems of either tolerance or intolerance, or what has happened with that as I've been gone and families have grown apart, or those kind of things. So especially for the reserve components, the 33,000 in Indiana that we have deployed since 9/11, just that family nucleus change. They're not coming back and going to Fort Hood, Texas, or a base where they go right back into that lifestyle. They're going back into their communities and trying to get into that lifestyle. And we just see that whole myriad of adjustment in a family. And one thing that I'm very proud of in Indiana is more and more and more people are speaking out when they do need something and realizing just a simple family disconnect they may need help with, but that's not a mental illness. Right. That's not, something that's career ending or whatever. And we're getting very good at that. But that's just an example of something that I noticed in my family and with myself, even though my deployment was a very good experience.
I want to talk a little bit more about that. We're talking about the challenges facing military veterans coming home. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I do want to continue talking about some of the expectations on both sides of family members, and we will do that in just a moment. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today about the challenges facing military veterans coming home. Our guests are U.S. Army Colonel Ross Waltemath, First Lieutenant Bart Lamont of the Indiana Air National Guard, and Beth Carnes of the Indiana Mental Health Memorial Foundation. Just before the break, Colonel Waltemath, we were talking about sort of the challenges of reentry and what the expectations were. And you said something that just really intrigued me, where you said you'd gone away, and I think the cliche is that, you know, soldiers, when they go over there, aren't really thinking about grand principles in the foxhole or anything. They have an image of what home is. And the thing that intrigued me was you said, you know, I went away for 15 months, and I came back expecting everything to be the same, but life had changed back at home, too. How jarring was that? And as you pointed out, yours was a good experience. You had a supportive family, you had a good deployment, all of that sort of stuff. But even that was a little disconcerting and created some stress.
Not only did it stress while as I came home, but the type of modern-day instant connection you have with your family while you're gone. I would receive the emails from my wife about my boy winning the baseball tournament or my daughter's first day at college and those kind of things, or the number of emails I've got where my wife was mad at me about something I could not fix while I was in Iraq. But that added to that separation anxiety that we did have when you felt a little bit helpless about that. What we get concerned about on the military side is making sure that doesn't become a distraction from the mission, because these folks have to buckle up that gear and go out there and have clarity in their mind to be able to run those missions when they go out. But for me, it was rather difficult. First of all, I've been active duty with the Indiana National Guard for 23 years, and I probably did not even take care of myself as well as what I should have. I just thought my family knew it, just thought my family was going to be ready for it. Did not realize when I came back how much it had affected my 8-year-old child and how it, my boy was very affected by it, that even today he will make comments that are brand new to me about how much it affected him. But when I walked through that door coming back, I think that's the adjustment I had the most difficulty with, was children grow a lot in a year. 15 months, you know. I was gone for 3 months for all the training. I was home for a month, and then I was gone for 9 months, 10 months in theater. And the cycles that I missed of children's growth, and the cycle that I watched of my wife developing as a single parent, which is a lot different skills than a two-parent household. Those were the kind of things I really noticed when I came back. Took me a while to actually find my place in the household again, as my wife had told me on numerous of our heated discussions, that she was not in my army and she was not going to jump like my workers did for me when I said things like that. So there were some adjustments with that. Probably the last big adjustment in my life when I came back was that for that whole deployment time, I had a battle buddy. And my battle buddy was the one person that I always hung around with, that I always talked with, that every day I was responsible for. We knew wherever we were at together. We didn't go anywhere by yourselves and all that. And when you come home and you go back home, you don't have that battle buddy. And you go through almost a separation anxiety when you get home that your family doesn't understand, because for 9 months in theater, I had my battle buddy and a couple of people that were with me every day, from working out at 5 o'clock in the morning to going to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning. That they were with us all the time.
Yeah, that's almost the equivalent of a marriage
itself. It is. Yeah. But with a higher intensity because of the type of things we were working with and the type of things that were going on. And there was an anxiety in myself when I got back home and did not have that person to share with and that kind of stuff. And it was a little, I don't want to say threatening for my wife, but not quite understanding that situation with my wife. And those communication skills took a while for Shelly and I to get back. And my wife's name is Shelly, to get back going again between us. She was still wrapped around all the
life changes.
She
wanted to be your battle buddy, too.
She wanted me to understand immediately all the changes that had gone on in the family, with a daughter going to college and a son, you know, with the problems he had at school and all this sort of stuff. And I didn't understand that yet. So.
Well, and those are, I'm going to, again, if this question's too intrusive, I do want you to tell me that. But I would think, as a father myself, missing that stuff, I couldn't help but resent it a little bit, that if I, for whatever reason, was not able to see those moments.
Well, yes and no.
Okay.
The part, okay, I'll give you my soldier answer, because
I'll take that one, but then I'd like the human being.
Okay, this kind of blends together. I fought to get on a deployment because I'm a soldier and because for years I had been involved in the process of picking who was going.
Yeah.
And I needed to go, and my family had watched how I needed to do what all of the other soldiers in the Indiana National Guard were doing, and that was important for me to do that process. So my family was kind of ready for that and prepared for that, but my children were a little bitter that I was making that choice to leave them for that process, even though they kind of wanted to understand that. There was a little time that took them for them to realize that I was not choosing to leave them. I was choosing to do what I'd been trained for and what the rest of our soldiers, you know, and airmen in the Guard were doing and do my part and do my serving. And that has taken multiple discussions with children after I've been home for them to finally get it. My favorite story is my daughter and I were out to eat for her birthday right after she had come back, and while we were walking out, I happened to be late for dinner like I usually am. A couple of little ladies were sitting there eating, and as we were walking by with my daughter, one of the women grabbed my blouse, my military blouse here, and said, "You know, we just want to thank you for what you do." That was the red light. The light bulb moment went on for my daughter. She turned to me and she goes, "Do people do that a lot?" And I said, "Well, you know, they kind of do today. People are very proud of what we've done." And she said, "That is really cool." And I think that was the moment for my daughter when she finally got why that was important for me to go. But it took her over a year before she finally realized that.
Mm-hmm. And the human answer, I guess, at a real human level, I mean, I'm sure you would have liked to have been there to see your daughter go to college.
I miss the things like the graduation from high school and the big baseball game and those kind of things. And that was very hard. That was very – you have some very depressed days in theater, but you have to get focused again. But I had done some special things. I had already pre-purchased all the birthday presents, all the Christmas presents, holiday presents, and I had distributed them with a bunch of friends, and I had laid this all out. So I got to be part of all the celebrations that were gone, but holidays were tough. Family events were tough. Birthdays were tough. And but, you know, I hate to say this, but the soldier coming back out in me, that is something I wanted to experience as a soldier. I wanted to experience what everybody else had done. And my wife later on had actually told me that she was very proud that she had the now military family experience because she had lived through what all the other military families had done.
Yeah. We are talking about the challenges facing military veterans coming home. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I want to ask real quickly, I'm going to move the conversation here away in just a second from the veterans themselves to this area that you both alluded to what it does to the families, too. And to some degree, the friends. But first, I'd like to ask, there are a lot of support groups out there for veterans right now. Have either of you, Colonel Waltemoth or Lieutenant Lamont, taken advantage of those? And what do you think of them? Okay, one of you has to speak. It's radio.
Junior guy.
Okay, right. All right.
Personally, I haven't utilized them myself. I've worked with, for example, the Wounded Warriors Project and what they have. And I'm 28 years old, single, no immediate family besides siblings and parents. And so I say the real heroes are the guys over there with three and four children apiece in their 40s and 50s. And these are the veterans coming home whose families are really taking the toll. And myself, I was fortunate enough to come back to a job and work with. And so I use it as an experience at a young age to come back and help the others through these other projects. But personally, I've not been.
And what do you do when you're not fighting for this country?
Well, while I was overseas, actually, I was a state employee with Lieutenant Governor Becky Skillman's office. And now I work with Congressman Mike Pence.
Okay. Colonel Waltemoth, what do you think of the veteran support groups? Have you made use of them? Or?
I have made use of them in a couple of roles. Of one, going out and making sure they're of the quality and the type of program that we – there are a lot of veteran support organizations out there. And part of what I do for the National Guard is we go out and clarify and qualify to make sure these are the type of things we want our service members to go to. I have not had to myself not had the feeling like I really needed to go and participate in anyone for my personal feelings, but as much as I have right now, I really feel good about helping other people that might have issues. So I've kind of found myself on the other side of that aspect on the support. My focus for the last 3 years now since being back is to build all those community program relationships and the referral capabilities that we have to get to those support groups. I will tell you, though, that if there's a service member or a family member who has issues, you cannot underestimate the value behind a support group. Being able to talk to a peer, spouse to spouse, child to child, service member to service member, it's invaluable because you've got to be able to relate to somebody on the same level of what you've gone through. We even have support groups now in Indiana through the Indiana Gold Star chapters for our surviving families. You know, we've lost 181 service members in Indiana, and we've actually got support structures going now in Indiana to take care of those surviving family members. So my whole focus for the last 3 years is finding those organizations, getting them publicized out there where people can get to them, because there's a lot of value in those programs.
We are talking about the challenges facing military veterans coming home. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Beth Carnes of the Indiana Mental Health Memorial Foundation. That is a mouthful of a title, by the way.
It is.
We've talked a lot here and alluded to the stresses that families face as well. Could you talk a little bit about what it does to have a family member away in a, you know, what we all know is a dangerous place? What that does to the family structure?
What Colonel Waltemath has talked a lot about is the fact that you have wives who've never taken care of households. They've never managed checkbooks. They've always had a partner in raising the children. You have children who are accustomed to, you know, the parental figure of the father, and maybe he's the disciplinarian of the household. So that person leaves, and the entire structure of the household changes. Mom now has to be everybody and do everything, and often people really do resent that.
Except when mom leaves. Mom's the one who goes into service.
That's
too.
True. And that's yeah, that's right.
25%.
And dad's got to do it.
In which case, then...
That's right. Then dad's got to become everything. Or in the situation that both parents deploy. Now the kids are left behind, and they have to, you know, maybe be at a family member. So the stress that happens in that family can become overwhelming. And in a state like Indiana that we don't have one place that those families live, again, they're going through it all alone sometimes out there in that one community. And unless they know where to go for help or how to reach out for help, those families can become in crisis. So what we try to do is be sure to publicize that and help them understand, I think, that this is norm about the places they can go for the help that they need on site, so that they don't have to fight with that soldier that has been deployed far away, because that is challenging for both sides. One thing that we know is really hard for those families to deal with are the financial issues sometimes that occur, and the fact that employers might not be as flexible as they might need to be with this family member who's here now being a single parent. So the challenges facing these families really are large, and I think they don't realize quite often how much they've changed until the soldier returns. And then all of the feelings that they've had, and maybe the anger that they're having, or the confusion that they're having, resentment that they're having about the situation, come out over time while the soldier's also dealing with all of the changes that have gone on within them. So if a family's not strong before that soldier goes, mm-hmm. which is so often the case, then that soldier is more at risk for the problems. And one of the things that we're hoping to do with Colonel Waltemath and some of the other units in the Guard is to sort of identify the folks that might be at risk in the very first training before they even go off to basic. And we're going to kick this off next year so that we can all look at the kinds of soldiers we're building resiliency in, mm-hmm. and the risk factors that might be there for that soldier, so that we have the support in place when they come home. Mm-hmm. And part of that project will be to talk to the employers as well, because getting back for Colonel Walton Matthews in the Guard, mm-hmm. that's his employer. So he goes back to work, and everybody, that's a culture that understands why you leave. But you go back to a small organization or even some of the larger employers in Indiana, and now everybody doesn't know quite how to treat you. Mm-hmm. If you have a reaction or a response that's different than you had before, everyone shies away from you. So what employers need to learn is, how do we integrate this person? Maybe they've changed computer systems, something, you mm-hmm. know, as simple or complicated as that. This person now doesn't know anything, and if as employers we don't understand that, then we're not helping that person reintegrate.
We've gotten an email question. This is for Colonel Waltemath. It's from Marcus Thomas. It says, "Sir, what are some of the family assistance services and programs our returning veterans can tap into to reintegrate and sustain our families?"
Well, we've developed, right now we're in charge of about 11 different departments in Indiana, from employment services to crisis intervention, suicide prevention. We've got all kinds of family assistance centers. We have 14 full-time family assistance centers throughout the state. And then we've got everything from full-time chaplains to employer support, guard, reserve, transition assistance.
I'm going to try to make this a news you can use segment. Mm-hmm. If you are someone who's feeling overwhelmed right now and you want to, how do they do that? Who should they call? What's the website or whatever? That would be very, very helpful, I think, because I think that speaks to Marcus Thomas's question here, is really how do we access that information?
Right. We have an 800 number, 1-800-237-2850.
And then do that one more time, because people...
Okay, 1-800-237-2850, and then extension 3192. Again, extension 3192. That gets you into our family programs from any payphone, any phone number, toll free. Probably my biggest concern right now is we want to try to get our programs are available to all branches of service. We're very fortunate in the Indiana Guard that we have this structure everywhere, but the reserves don't have that good of a structure in Indiana because they've got most of their structures out of state. Same thing with maybe the Marine Reserves and the Navy Reserves. They have very good people supporting them, but not a structure like we do. So we open our doors to all branches and all services, and that is the number one issue for us right now, is making sure people know how do they get a hold of somebody. But one phone call can get you into any of our programs. And the nice thing is our programs all interact together. You get into one, it gets you access to all of them. So that's the biggie for us, is getting that information out.
We also have an 800 number,
please,
at Mental Health, so folks can call with questions,
please,
there as well.
Please deliver the number.
And that
quick.
Is 800-555-6424. 800-555-6424.
And Bart, to complete the cycle, I see that you've got one as well.
Yes, in honor of the News You Can Use segment, actually, as this show goes on, there's a Veterans Career Fair virtually taking place online at www.veteranscareerfair.com. VeteransCareerFair.com, and that goes until 4 p.m. today.
We are talking about the challenges facing military veterans coming home here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. I'm John Kroll. Welcome back to No Limits. We are talking today about the challenges facing military veterans coming home. We're fortunate to have as our guest U.S. Army Colonel Ross Waltemath, Indiana Air National Guard First Lieutenant Bart Lamont, and Beth Carnes of the Indiana Mental Health Memorial Foundation. We've been talking really about the stresses that service people and their families experience while they are overseas primarily. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can send us a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've gotten some email questions that basically just deal with overarching ones. And here's one, I think, when we were on the break, Lieutenant Lamont made reference to, How best can employers help to find unemployed or underemployed service members, veterans, in need of jobs? That's a huge challenge. I think you'd mentioned, obviously, that this puts some stress on employers, too, because they'll have part of their workforce leave during the middle of it.
Most definitely. After 10 years of war, these, especially the small employers, I mean the backbone of the American economy, when they might only have 5 or 6 employees, if one employee is gone for 12 to 16 months at a time, that's a significant amount of their workforce gone. And so I think working with the employer support of the Guard and Reserve, they're an agency established to help communicate these issues, what's expected of an employer, but then also what's expected of a service member who is deploying. And so I used them actually in preparation for my deployment to help with some of the requirements that you notify your HR department, that you notify the business owner, let them know when you're going to be gone. So I'd say reaching out to the, they call ESGR, Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve, would be the best or the first step.
We also have a program, and one thing we haven't mentioned is that that soldier who comes back and is wounded,
mm-hmm.
Traumatic brain injury can change your functioning level such that you function fine, but maybe you don't have that technical skill that you used to have for the job that you had. So our program has been working with the Guard for folks who are having trouble in the job development that they do at the Guard and actually need some more support. They are welcome to come over to our organization. We have the Center of Excellence for Workforce Development. You can reach that at the same 800 number, 555.
Go ahead, feel free to give it again.
800-555-6424. And in that area, we actually match the person to the job. We help them then. We go one-on-one and train with them. It's a very supportive environment, and we've been successful now at placing quite a few people that we've worked with, Colonel Waltemath, to find some jobs.
What do you find, Colonel Waltemath, when you're helping returning service people come back and they're looking for work? I mean, what sort of advice do you give them?
Well, we actually have an employment office now that helps take military mentality and military language into civilian resumes, teaching simple things that just aren't taught very well anymore, like job interview skills and how to actually research a business about you're going to interview, know something about the business and all that. But we have got two big groups of in the employment world. One, you've got the folks who have come back and the factory has closed down and actually is gone and they're unemployed. And we've got to start them over with either getting them some new skill training or maybe going back to school on their GI Bill and a part-time job is the answer for them. But you also have a whole large group of young service members who come back and say, darn it, I can do more than what I'm doing right now. Mm-hmm. I need a new focus. So we'll get them into college. We'll get them on a technical training, help them get on a path where they can be more than what they are, because they come back after doing what they've just done in a war zone and leading soldiers and being responsible for millions of dollars worth of equipment and coming back and realizing the little job I've got now is not what I want to be as a profession in my future. So there's a very large group there that we actually interact with in our education office and our employment cell, and we interact with Workforce One and all the different agencies out there to get these people into a professional track because they now know they can do it.
We are talking about the challenges facing military veterans as they come home. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I want to pick up on that point a little bit because it seems to me that also would be a difficult adjustment, that you're over somewhere, you're in position of great danger, but also great importance, and you know exactly at some level what the mission is, what you're supposed to do. I would think it would be a little difficult, and I'm just going to pick a job at random. But if you're over there defending the free world and notions of what this country is about, it's a little bit difficult then to say, "Oh yeah, I want to come back to Indiana and sell shoes." That there is, in effect, a kind of crisis of meaning. Beth Carnes, you're nodding your head up and down. Is that a challenge veterans face?
It is. What we find is that these folks now have a new skill set that has really trained them to do something bigger and better. And I think Indiana National Guard has done a great job. This employment unit that they've developed is new. And I think it came out of just these factors that folks come back and And there are so many young kids that are going, and these kids have had jobs that just don't reach the level of importance that they certainly would be qualified to do now that they're back. So I have applauded the job unit at the Guard. And then in those circumstances that we just can't find a fit, then they are also reaching out to community agencies to say, how can you help us? So that we're able to get involved with the soldier as well. One thing that I think is really important to say and to remember is that right now we're in a wartime, and we're putting a lot of money and effort into all of these programs that are wonderful that are being done by the J9 unit. We haven't even talked about all the cultural issues and the STARS program and all of the things that are going on that are really great right this minute. Mm-hmm. My real fear as a mental health professional is that the war will end, the money will go away, we won't have all of the opportunity inside of the Army at the National Guard level, and we haven't developed enough of our community resources. And I feel like they have scrambled and done a lot at the federal level to make sure we're working on all of the things that we need to be working on in terms of the soldiers' needs. But the community maybe hasn't stepped up enough yet, because we've got to be prepared as a community for the long-term impact of this war. And this is, it's going to impact generations now.
Well, our wars, actually.
That's right.
We've got a couple.
And we have statistics that say from 2004, I think it's through 2010, every 36 hours a soldier has committed suicide. I mean, there are real issues here that we have to be sure our communities are ready to activate for, so that we're doing everything that we possibly can. As you said, these folks have gone over to take care of us and support our country. We need to be sure we're doing all of the things, not just at the Guard level, but in the community area, passing laws, making funds available, being sure there are good programs that actually work, so that these soldiers will be supported in the long term.
Well, let me pivot on that point then real quickly and talk to Lieutenant Lamont and Colonel Waltemath, who are the two service people right now. We've talked about the programs that are in place, and you both mentioned that they've been helpful and that they're good. What is the one change we could do right now? One big thing, as either, a political force, a government body, or just as a community, we could do that would help veterans the most. Is there one that you can think of? Colonel Waltemath.
Oh, thank you. one thing. I would probably have to say the one thing that comes to my mind is making the community resources military friendly. Meaning they have to understand what the service member, a soldier, an airman, or a Marine has gone through. A good example, couples counseling. Mm-hmm. You've got social workers that do couples counseling and ministries that do couples counseling. But if they don't understand what a deployment is, and they don't understand what combat is, and if they don't understand that separation anxiety, there's no way they're ever going to help that couple. So that's probably the one thing, that if we could get the communities to understand that military lifestyle and that be military friendly about what it means to that person, that family. And I don't know how you put a tag on that, but that's kind of what we have discovered our future needs going to be with the. There are plenty of resource communities out there for us to access, but it's accessing it with a way that it will be beneficial to the service member and the family is huge.
I had the opportunity to
Beth
go
Carnes,
through a cultural competence training that the Guard put on,
mm-hmm.
And it was very eye-opening, and it's a new program. They're trying to train providers to understand this is a cultural issue. And what we learn is about all, cultural competency that doesn't bring to mind soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
They're a separate culture. What they go through is very separate. It's a new culture that everyone needs to learn. Employers need to understand that culture. Certainly all medical providers, I would offer, need to understand that culture so that we are noticing the problems where the person is accessing services. If they go to the general doctor and something's going on and that doctor isn't familiar with that culture of the military, they won't be able to identify something early on and send that soldier or that family member to the help that they need. So I, again, applaud the Indiana National Guard because they are training providers right now. They understand the need is bigger than just the Guard, and they're out there training providers across the state. They're having multiple trainings to help the providers understand this is a culture we're talking about, and they're giving very good examples that if you say this, this is what the soldier hears, and right now you've shut that soldier off and they will never come back and they won't seek treatment. So those sorts of things, not only, though, in the practitioner community, but also in the employer community, we've got to be doing that.
Well, and I'm wondering, and I'm just tossing this, as a, we've talked an awful lot about the psychological, emotional stresses, but I think Lieutenant Bart Lamont has made the point that there are economic stresses, too, that come financial. I mean, should there be, and I'm pulling something out of the air here, but in effect a kind of affirmative action for veterans, or something like that, because I would think if you go over to fight for your country, you come back and find out that there's no job waiting for you, you'd feel like the social contract has been broken here at some level. I guess that's what I'm trying to get at. If there is something that veterans really could benefit from that we're not doing right now.
Well, before I touch on that, I would like to just revisit the what your listeners, the community, can do for veterans. And too often, I think people look towards government for their answers. And it's as simple as if you know a veteran has just come home, offer to take them out for a cup of coffee. The human interaction, I mean, time together with a neighbor, with a friend, with a high school classmate, I think is more valuable than anything that any of these government agencies that we've mentioned can provide. They've got a function, don't get me wrong, and I've had great interaction throughout the entire process. But working together with one of your neighbors, I think, is the most important part. I mean, put the focus back on the person-to-person interaction and stop looking for the government to fix all of your problems.
Mm-hmm. And I guess what I'm saying then is there nothing then that we should do as a culture or a society then to help veterans more than we're currently doing?
Well, I think that the agencies and different institutions are in place. It's raising awareness, like we have PTSD walks. I think awareness and shows like this, where you're talking about the issues, putting veterans or other service members who have problems, showing them the outlets where to go to address those. I'd say just continue raising awareness.
We've gotten a question also that speaks to, that I guess one of the enduring myths of Vietnam was that, there were a lot of drug and alcohol substance abuse problems that came out of that. Are we seeing similar instances of that in these two wars? Beth Carnes.
Well, we feel certainly like maybe we're not addressing some of the drug and alcohol issues that are coming out of this war. We're trying to work to educate the families and the loved ones and help them understand that sometimes these kinds of things are what folks use to cover their stress. That's what, they kind of go to that place to self-medicate. So if you see a loved one that is indulging in drugs or alcohol, you probably need to have that open and frank conversation with them to talk about that problem head on. We believe that we are going to see drug and alcohol problems as a result of these wars if we're not recognizing them and being honest that they exist, I think.
Well, and we've got one that speaks to sort of the public service component here too. An email question from Blake in Indy says, "We have a vacuum of role models for youth these days. Tutoring and mentoring not only helps the community, but also helps the mentor. These folks are honorable and service-oriented. Programs and jobs in this area should be a no-brainer. Is that the sort of community connection that we're referring to, Colonel Waltemath.
Yes, absolutely. I think you benefit two things on that. The community benefits for a professional who has the skill set, and then you've also got that professional who's going to benefit from that community interaction. The one thing you don't take out of an airman or marine or a soldier is that willing to serve, and when we come back, we're just looking for a new avenue to serve. And teaching and taking care of youth and being involved in community programs is an outstanding area to do that. As you're going to see, a future growth in the American Legion and VFW and the other veteran service organizations is going to be, what are you going to do for my community? What can I do as an action person? And teaching is just, there's an actual troops to teachers program that we can get service members involved in if they'd like to become teachers, but fantastic place for them to go.
Beth Carnes, I'd like you to toss out the 800 number once again for veterans to get help if they need it.
800-555-6424.
And Lieutenant Bart Lamont, please give the website again.
The VeteransCareerFair.com, and that's going on until 4 p.m., VeteransCareerFair.com.
We have been talking today on No Limits about the challenges facing military veterans coming home. We've been fortunate to have as our guest U.S. Army Colonel Ross Waltemath. Colonel Waltemath, it's been a pleasure and a privilege to sit down with you.
Thank you very much.
We also have been fortunate to have with us Indiana Air National Guard First Lieutenant Bart Lamont. Lieutenant Lamont, good to have you with us.
Thank you very much, John.
And Beth Carnes of the Indiana Mental Health Memorial Foundation. Beth, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you.
We will be back next week when we will be celebrating Entrepreneur Week with our guests. Thank you for spending this time with us. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. We will see you next week. Take care.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Public Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alsett. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday at 1 p.m. for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m., and you can listen online at WFYI.org.